values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
As always, we appreciate you spending part of your day with us. A four-point plan, or four basic points in a plan that Phoenix Police Chief Sullivan, Michael Sullivan, was in with us this morning talking about the new crime reduction plan in the city of Phoenix, making admission about staffing, and we'll get to that coming up here in just a moment, that, you know, it is one thing to have a plan that is a great plan. It's another thing to have enough personnel to do the job. But here are the four basics that they are going to focus on as a police department. Part of the reason why they're doing this is being laser focused because they are short staffed, meaning we have to regroup. And this is his words, not mine, you know, from his perspective, that we have to be laser focused with every officer and every precinct on every shift in doing these things if we are going to be successful. And the four things are focusing on the most violent people, the most active places, prohibited possessors. Those are people that have firearms that are not allowed to by law. And violent offenders with outstanding arrest warrants. The chief believes, and so does his command staff that helped come up with this plan, that if the Phoenix Police Department focuses in those four areas, that they will successfully reduce crime. And I think that as simple as that sounds, and it's much broader and much more complex as you dig into the plan, that is a good, solid four-point plan for anybody to follow. If you've ever been in a boardroom, you've been in some kind of an organization, when you have a simple plan that everybody understands and then you break down each one individually into its complexities, you have much more, a bigger likelihood of success. Those four things every citizen in Phoenix can understand. Those four things every officer from a first-year officer to a 20 or 30-year officer can understand. The most violent people in the most active places, prohibited possessors, and violent offenders with outstanding arrest warrants. It is simple, and it is focusing on the people that are committing the most violent crimes and pose the biggest threat to the safety, security, and property of the people of Phoenix. So he's going after, this is what his comments about going after these repeat offenders.
We're talking about a tiered approach, so we can measure and hold ourselves accountable as we go forward, you know, and pull those folks off the street before they can offend and offend and offend again.
So I'm going to go over these. The one, it says the most violent people. The most violent suspects are engaged in high volume of violence in our community. The early identification, investigation, apprehension, and prosecution of these individuals provides the highest probability of preventing additional crime. Number two on the list, the most active places. I thought this was very interesting. A disproportionate amount of the criminal behavior in our city is concentrated in specific geographical locations within each precinct. Patrol officers are expected to perform intelligence-directed patrol activities designed to prevent and control crime while identifying criminal offenders by focusing on the instrumentalities of crime such as firearms and stolen vehicles, etc. So it's interesting when he talks about it looking different, that it looks different in every neighborhood.
We need to make sure that we're looking at each area distinct that it is and making sure that it's addressed through a community approach. It's not just a police approach. We want solutions that are going to last.
So the city of Phoenix, like other cities across the country, are broken down into precincts. And in each precinct, they're broken down into beats. And what is important about to know about this is that as squads of officers work together, they not only get to know each other and how each other operates, and they can rely on each other like any other team. You know, a team that starts its first week of practice has not gelled as a team. By the time you work together for a while, you know, and how each other react. If you're a football fan, and I'm a huge football fan, knowing that the quarterback-receiver relationship, that they can look at a defense and say, okay, the quarterback in his mind says, I know what that receiver is going to do. I can see the defense. I already know what he's thinking, and you're reacting to that. That's what a cohesive team looks like. That's a part of this. The other part is those squads of officers knowing the areas that they patrol. One of the things I learned in a ride-along with Phoenix PD a long time ago is that when you know a neighborhood, and it's unfortunate, but it's also very helpful. When you, there's a call, there's a tone that goes out over the Phoenix police radio, and then the dispatcher says emergency traffic, meaning that this is a crime in progress. It doesn't mean that each time it is a life-threatening situation. It's just that this is a priority one call. This is happening right now. It'll say emergency traffic. And then you'll hear officers saying they're responding to that particular call. And then you can hear officers talking to each other on the radio. Oh, I know that address. We know those people. We've been here before. You know what I mean? It makes you better at your job. You know the businesses. You know what they do. You know when they do it. And you are more familiar. And those residents become more and more familiar with you, which is also a big part of this, is making sure that the community is bought in on this. And that's where this 10-page plan comes into effect. It's just a terrific idea. So then it goes on to talk about prohibited possessors. These individuals have been linked to a higher number of violent crimes and disorder within our communities. A coordinated approach that reduces the opportunities for these individuals to reoffend. They're going to go after those prohibited possessors. And finally, number 4, violent offenders with outstanding warrants. It says, violent offenders with outstanding warrants present a threat to our community, and the department will utilize a department-wide prioritized tiered approach to going out and actively finding people with warrants that are known as violent offenders. So I talked with him about how do you juggle all of this. That, you know, it is one thing to say, I asked him, do you have enough officers to do this? And here's how he responded, pretty blunt.
What I can say is this plan gets us focused, and we have to be laser focused when you're 500 officers down from where we should be to be able to do this work.
And we have to. That's basically, I said, so how do you juggle this? That this is a multi-tiered plan, but we can all talk about the need for officers or being short-staffed. I asked him directly, how do you juggle all of this yourself?
We have to. There's no other option. Providing public safety is critical to the growth and the health of this community, and we'll do whatever we have to do to be able to do that. We do it with overtime. We have officers working incredible amounts of overtime. We also have a summer staffing plan where we're taking folks, detectives who work in offices, putting them out for additional shifts on the street, asking our patrol officers to work extra shifts on the street during the times that we know that we have high volume. So we use data to be able to drive those decisions.
Yeah, so you're asking people to work a very high stress job to begin with and then work more hours. It is not ideal, but it's what they said they need to do, and they're going to continue to do what they're doing. So they have a 30 by 30 plan, meaning they want to have 30% of their recruits be female by 2030. It's going very well. They believe they're on track to getting more. They're seeing more and more officers in the academy, which is very good. They're seeing growth. They're seeing positive numbers in the Phoenix PD, which means they're hiring more people than they're losing, which is good. And the last thing I said was, what is your message to the citizens of Phoenix? And here's what he wanted you to know.
Engage with your police department, especially at that precinct level. You make sure that you're involved in your community. You share information. If you see something, say something, and report what is going on in your area so we can work together collaboratively to reduce crime.
Good message. I like the plan. I think it's available online, I believe, at the Phoenix PD website. You should take a look at it, especially if you're a resident of Phoenix. I think it'll make you feel pretty good about the plan and cohesiveness of this moving forward. And let's see what the results are in the next 3 to 6 months. And we'll be talking to the chief about that. Coming up in a moment, we get you caught up on the biggest news stories of the day with a segment we call Did You Hear This? So it's coming right up.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
11:20 means it's time to catch you up on the headlines. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
College student Olivia shares her frustration on TikTok over a failing grade.
This is like the most biased grade ever because my project is about transgenders competing in biological women's sports. How am I supposed to do my final project if I can't use the word biological women? But that's what my project is about.
What is so wrong with reinforcing heteronormativity?
Wow, what a great, those are some $5 words right there. Way to go, Sal. I would say there's nothing wrong with it. We have gone to, the pendulum continues to swing thing, I think, politically. It always has and it always will. It has swung so far to the left in this issue here where you are silencing voices that don't agree with everything somebody says on one side. That's an indicator that the pendulum is about to swing in the other direction. When somebody in academia gets a zero on a page because they don't use the proper terminology when it comes to gender identity and they use a phrase like that, you know that the pendulum is too far in one direction and it's not long before it swings the other way.
Karine Jean-Pierre says busing illegal immigrants from the border to other cities is dangerous and unacceptable.
And we'll continue to be very, very clear about that. It is dangerous and unacceptable because you're putting people's lives at risk. And it's dangerous and unacceptable because you're actually putting a lot of pressure on these states and local areas. And so,
how should the federal government manage interstate transporting of migrants?
There's a line in the movie Animal House where he says, "You can't treat our pledges that way. Only we can treat our pledges that way." And that's exactly what they're saying here. You can't treat migrants that way. Only we can. If this is not the epitome of hypocrisy, I don't know what is. The federal government, the White House is saying, putting migrants on buses and busing them to cities where they don't have any guarantee of support is putting strains on cities. You do realize that the federal government has been doing this for years, which is why border states are so fed up. And now they're saying they know how to do it. We can do it the right way. You don't know how to. It's crazy. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to catch you up on the big news stories.
NYC's Mayor Eric Adams admits that taking in additional migrants under his plan is not sustainable.
But I want to be clear on this. This is not sustainable. We cannot continue to sustain this with the inflow that we're receiving. I don't want anyone to believe that this is sustainable because it is not.
Has Mayor Adams effectively admitted that the Dems' open border policies cannot continue?
Yeah, and I think that what it is showing the mayor, unfortunately, is that to say that you are a sanctuary city sounds terrific. It sounds like it is such a very kind way to behave. In practice, it's an impossibility. He's caught between a rock and a hard place. He is busing people from his city to the suburbs, and those suburban cities are saying, no, you can't do that, and they're going to court. And in the end, he is pointing the finger in the right direction, which is the federal government, that what is happening is unsustainable. We've been saying in Arizona, they've been saying it in Texas, and you're now hearing it in Chicago and New York. At some point, people have to start listening that the policies of what's happening right now are unsustainable.
Phoenix Police Chief Michael Sullivan announced the department's crime reduction plan.
We're kicking this off into the second quarter of the year, but we're going to measure ourselves at the end of the year and see where we are. I have confidence that the team is going to put the work and effort in and collaborate with the community to make sure that we meet those goals.
Besides reductions in crime, what's another key indicator of a successful plan that we should be looking out for?
I think we are going to start seeing the numbers of people that are injured in violent attacks, the number of times you're going to see people being shot at, whether they are shot, you know, physically injured or not. I think when you start seeing a drop in that, when we start seeing a drop in the homicide rate, those are going to be indicators. The indicators will also be property crimes. They are looking at violent crime reduction and property crime reduction. They've got goals they've set, and in 6 months they're going to reassess. And if you look at this plan, if it's implemented the way the chief says it's going to be, I think it's going to be very successful and maybe a model for other agencies around the state and around the country. Great job, Sal, as always. And those $5 words, keep them coming, man. Really good. Excellent work. And I want to thank Chief Sullivan again for coming in studio this morning. It means a lot to us here, but I also am glad that the audience gets to hear firsthand from the chief of police and the plans they're coming up with, dealing with the staffing issues as they are. They are not sitting back and saying, we can't do this or we can't do that. What they are doing is saying, with the resources we have, this is what we can accomplish if we are all focused. I also think it's good for a team. He would be the head coach of the team, but he's also got a great coaching staff. His command staff around him, the men and women who have decades of experience right here in the city of Phoenix, which is, although Chief Sullivan has decades of experience in law enforcement, he doesn't have decades here in the city of Phoenix. But surrounding himself with that great coaching staff, to use an analogy, and then going to them and putting together a game plan, sitting the team down, offense and defense, and I'm going back to my coaching days, and saying, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. If we're going to be successful when we run out of this locker room, we're going to be successful, A, as a team, and B, if we're focused. And that was the message I got from the chief this morning. And I thought it was a good one, and I'm anxious to see how well this plan works going down the road. In a moment, we're going to focus on the border. We did a little bit of it, and did you hear this? You're going to hear some of these comments about the border, and will they be working? Because the president just had another one of his migrant plans shot down in court. We'll discuss all of it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, there's absurd and then there's absurd. And we're going to talk about some absurdity and let you hear the White House speak in a moment on the border. This is not a political issue for me. Never has been. I've talked about the border. I've talked about immigration. Juan Siscomani is a congressman from southern Arizona. I've been talking about the border issue and without the clarification and talking about these three different areas and not realizing that I wasn't making the distinction as well as he had made the distinction. So he gets the credit for this. But the three elements when we talk about the border, there are three elements. One of them is border security. The other is immigration itself. Then there is commerce and trade. Now, they are intermingled, but they are separate issues. And speaking about the border security issue and the illegal migration, this is where they cross over, where people are coming into this country illegally and how we're dealing with those people. Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, they're very upset at the White House because states are busing migrants all over the country.
I've said it many times from here, repeatedly from this podium, that busing or flying migrants around the country without any coordination with the federal government, we've talked about this, state or local officials as well, is dangerous and unacceptable. And we'll continue to be very, very clear about that. It is dangerous and unacceptable because you're putting people's lives at risk. And it's dangerous and unacceptable because you're actually putting a lot of pressure on these states and local areas. And so
this is exactly what the federal government has been doing forever. They bus people, and you talk to people that are in charitable organizations. There is rarely a heads up that's given. You don't have a say in how many people they're dropping off. As a matter of fact, during the pandemic, people were very upset because Gila Bend is a small community, a very small community. And the people of Gila Bend had a group of migrants that were dropped off in a park between a retirement home and a public school. And there's one ambulance in Gila Bend, one. And they had no services for these migrants. What if one of them was diagnosed positively with COVID at that time? You're sandwiched between a retirement home, a retirement community, and an element or a school. I mean, the bookends of the COVID disaster, and they were just dropped off. They had to call in other agencies, other cities had to come in and help out Gila Bend. This is the fact that they say these things with a straight face. And everybody, I'm not talking about Fox News, everybody, MSNBC, CNN, the worldwide media, local media of border states and not border states, not just out asking them, isn't that the most utterly hypocritical thing you've ever said? Because this is exactly why Arizona started busing migrants. It's why Texas started busing migrants. It's why Florida started flying migrants to Martha's Vineyard. It's the reason why these things happened, because there were cities like Chicago and like New York City who, and I've got to give credit to Mayor Adams, and you're going to hear him in a moment. Mayor Adams is a very, very, very staunch liberal Democrat that I would disagree with 95% of the time on issues. But Mayor Adams has turned a corner, because that is a sanctuary city. That is a city that has declared itself a sanctuary for illegal immigrants to come to their city and be safe. And he is saying this is unsustainable. The federal government has to do something. This is a federal issue. Listen to how bad it's getting. This is Mayor Adams because now they've put them up in hotels, they've built facilities, they've tried to put them in gymnasiums at public schools, and that didn't work out. They're busing people. It just happened again to a suburb of New York City in the middle of the night. They bust people to a hotel there. They've been pushed back in the courts, and now he's saying this may be the last resort.
It is my vision to take the next step to this, to go to the faith-based locales, and then move to private residents. There are residents who are suffering right now because of economic challenges. They have spare rooms. They have locales. And if we can find a way to get over the 30-day rule and other rules that government has in its place, we can take that $4.2 billion, $4.3 it may be now, that we potentially would have to spend, and we can put it back in the pockets of everyday New Yorkers, everyday houses of worship, instead of putting it in the pockets of corporations. And some of those corporations come from outside our city. We should be recycling our own dollars. We should take this crisis and go to opportunities. That is how we can deal with this.
So what is the background check? How do you do that? Foster families. Now, some of these migrants may be adults, but what are the chances that there are going to be bad actors that are taking advantage of people getting paid this kind of money? What are the standards that will be set? And then what happens if you're a family? I want you to think about this for a moment and the possibilities. What if you're a family and you say, you know what, we could sure use the extra money. We want to help these migrants out. We're going to help out our city. So sure, we'll take in some people. You know, how many can we take? This is what we have. We have a room. Here's the limit. This is what we're going to pay you. That's great. Send them. So the people come. What are your requirements for them? Are they required to have the run of your home? Do you have to provide meals for them? What happens if it isn't working out in your mind? What if you say, all right, this has got to end. It's time for these people to go. I don't want them here anymore. Can you evict them? Can you throw them out? Can you say, go back to the mayor and say, listen, it's not working out for us. We want these people to go. Or can the city now say to you, you can't evict them? We've seen in New York City especially, but in other municipalities, how difficult it is to evict someone that's not paying rent. Someone, when you're the homeowner or you own the property and you want people out and you have a process that sometimes takes months to get them out. How many people are going to look into this program and say, this sounds like a decent idea, and then change their mind and be stuck? This is, but I can't believe I'm defending the mayor of New York because we disagree so much on things. What else is he supposed to do? What else is the mayor of New York supposed to do? Hotels are filling up. They can't, you know, it is the world city. You've got people from all over the world coming into New York. You're going to pack people that have no money into hotels. What do the other businesses in those neighborhoods do? So they're overflowing in hotels. Private facilities are not working out. They can't keep them in gymnasiums. They have been told they can't do that. And then the other part of it is, on top of that, they've been saying, well, all right, we want to use some of these other areas. We want to do some of these other things. We're going to send them to the suburbs. And these suburban towns are saying, we can't house these people. We don't have the room. We don't have the resources. They're going into court, and judges are saying, you can't send them here. What is this mayor supposed to do? Again, I'm using him as an example because he's not Ron DeSantis. You know, he's not the Texas governor. He's not our former governor, a staunch Republican. You hear what they say in Chicago, even places in California, not the governor. The governor of California is the ultimate in what I would consider to be political motivation. He calls Ron DeSantis a despicable little man or whatever he called him because private plane loads of people ended up in Sacramento, and then it's horrible and it's kidnapping. Well, they're not saying about Mayor Adams that's busing people across, or the federal government that's busing and flying people across the country. This is, again, a political attack. This is political gamesmanship at its best. I'm a Democrat governor in California. Ron DeSantis is a prominent Republican that has a chance at winning the nomination for president. So let's make sure everybody knows how much we hate what he's doing right now. We're going to call him a kidnapper, and we are going to say we are going to look at criminal charges. Politics, politics, politics. That's what this is all about. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk of the significance of June 6th. If you're not familiar, you will be in a moment. Stick around.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, appreciate the time. My life was changed a few years ago. I had the privilege of going to France during D-Day, and I was able to walk on the beaches of Normandy on D-Day, and that was June 6th, 1944 was D-Day. And you learn about it in school. I come from a family with a military background and a very patriotic background, and I learned a lot and heard a lot about D-Day, and like we do in schools, and we honor the men and women that we call the World War II generation, our greatest generation. But when you're standing on Omaha Beach or Utah Beach, when you go to Point du Hoc, you're standing at the Pegasus Bridge, when you're looking at some of these significant places, the museum in Normandy, and you're there on the beaches, and it's the American cemetery. So the land is owned by Americans. It's the one place where the American flag flies higher than the French flag. I don't even know where to begin with what this does, and I'm just going to tell you a couple of stories, because today is that 79th anniversary. A couple of things that were significant going in on D-Day, going into the museum, and there's videos, actual video footage of them storming the beaches, and you see the Higgins boats, and you hear the horrible stories of, you know, the Higgins boats when the doors were dropping. It's those little boats where the front door falls all the way down, and the soldiers and the Marines jump out. And they were so close to shore that they were, you know, there was about 4 years, I believe it was, that the Nazis had the opportunity to, you know, to entrench themselves on the beaches. And so they were in fortified positions above. And as soon as those doors were opening, they were shooting the soldiers before they jumped out of these boats, these Higgins boats. And so in an attempt to stop that from happening, they moved the boats back a little bit when they opened the doors, and they moved too far back into deeper waters where the water was 6 or 7 or 8 feet deep, which doesn't sound that bad, but you're carrying all those weighted gear along with your weapons, and they were jumping off the boats and drowning. It was a huge loss of life, and you're watching these videos of men running toward the gunfire, and you had to run some about 100 yards, it looked like to me when I was standing there on the beach, at least 100 yards you had to run toward gunfire to get to any cover. And you watch the videos of these men doing just that, storming the beach. And some of them would get hit by gunfire. You could see small arms fire hit them, and they'd fall to the sand. And then they would get back up and try to move again until they were shot a second time. Some of them made it, and many of them didn't. Point du Hoc, to look at that. I've watched a couple of documentaries, but I was standing there. And there's this big marble spire where Reagan spoke years ago. But to see that the Rangers, these young men in this pretty new idea of what a soldier was, climbing the face of a cliff, and many of them not making it. And when one was knocked off or shot off, they just the next man up, the next man climbed that rope, climbed that ladder. And when they finally reached the top, some of these, they were able to get to the top and engage the Nazis, who again were entrenched in these huge anti-ship guns. And they were able to fight. And they lost a lot of their own weapons, and they were taking the weapons from the dead German soldiers, and they were using them against the German soldiers in these fortified gun bases. And you can still walk in them. The guns are gone, but the turrets are there, and the fortified portion of it is still there. And they were able to fend them off, but they weren't able to do it in the time that they needed to radio and say that they were okay, and the communication that they had, you know, accomplished their mission and they were where they were supposed to be. And so it was over 24 hours that they were alone and engaging the enemy when backup, you know, when they had more troops show up to help them. But they were also firing weapons from the German soldiers, and they made a distinct sound, and they were being engaged by their own people for a short time because they thought they were hearing German rifles that were shooting at them. So all of this fog of war stuff was happening. The agriculture fields were flooded by the Germans, knowing that they would be dropping in from above. And so many of these paratroopers were drowning when they were landing in these fields as well. It was a time where I think we need to remember why we call them the greatest generation. The sheer sacrifice, bravery, and willingness to defend the free world. If we would have had a different outcome, everybody west of the Mississippi would speak Japanese, and everybody east of the Mississippi would be speaking German right now. And if it weren't for this generation, all of the citizens of our country working together and everybody pitched in, that's what America was all about. And I hope we never have to return to that kind of sacrifice. But we should always, 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 always remember it. It's why they're called the greatest generation. We'll be back tomorrow morning just after 8 o'clock with another edition of the show. Another big thank you to Chief Sullivan for coming on today. Again, I'll talk to you again tomorrow morning. Until then, have a great day, everyone. God bless.